You must have seen that there is a, you know, statue of Dr. B.R. Ambedkar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's pointing towards like that. So, it's, I feel it, like, personally feel it, that it is, like, he's telling us that generals go outside.
God created man in his own image, but maybe the devil kind of interfered there. The kind of measures they have taken for the upliftment of the section of society has yielded fruit. And now we can take this protection away or take this affirmative action away.
Hey Gaurav, we meet again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad that we both are kind of dressed in the theme of the book's cover. So.
Yeah, right.
Darkness gallery.
How's you?
I'm great. The weather has been kind of kind in terms of all the thunderstorms and rain that is happening. It almost feels like Thor is outside. But I'm just really excited to, you know, again get a chance to speak more about the issues that you guys brought up, because the interview which we had the last time, the diversity of topic, the sheer palette was just so enriching, even for me just to answer. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the sequel.
Okay. So, like, the first thing I would like is, I want you to guess today's topic.
Okay.
So, yeah, on action. Okay. Whenever, like, in colleges, you must have seen that there is a, you know, statue of Dr. B.R. Ambedkar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's pointing towards like that. So, it's, I feel it, like, personally feel it, that it is, like, he's telling us that generals go outside. So, can you guess the topic?
Wow. First of all, I don't think he's saying that. So, I will definitely raise umbrage to that issue. I think he's one of the most magnificent leaders that the country has produced. But if I'm supposed to talk with reference to what the topic might be, are you hopefully going to talk about reservation?
Yeah, you're right.
Great.
Good assistant.
See, this interview is completely designed to ban my book, guys. All right, let's go for it.
Yeah, so what do you think about, like, in our country, I've seen, like, most of the time, there is reservation for the SC. It is good.
Hmm.
Like, the weaker section should be, like, enriched and provided with such facilities. But that doesn't mean that the people who are actually capable of a certain position should be held back.
Right.
Yeah, so, and I really think that it is a very big hindrance to the country's development in all aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think about that?
I would say that when you are going to apply to certain colleges, which has a women's quota.
Yeah.
And given, if you have an opportunity to get that and, you know, probably get into your dream college, not many would say, no, I don't want to choose it.
Yeah.
And where does this whole genesis lie? It lies in the systematic oppression of certain sections of the society over thousands of years. You know, I love the idea of equality. You know, I get that frustration, which I, as a general man who's not from Kashmir, you know, in terms of there is just absolutely no quota which is available to me. And of course, there is that resentment that does grow, that, you know, I wish I had this path. But we would think of this path as a shortcut. But the marginalized societies who have been so over thousands of years would think of this as justice, right?
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to reservation, it has been such a tricky thing because of the different starting lines which different communities have had. When we speak about ending reservation or coming to a point where the merit should still be rewarded while uplifting the society, it's a tightrope that we have to walk. Unfortunately, in today's political climate, reservation has become an issue to divide rather than to unite.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And the way it is going, even B.R. Ambedkar ji never intended for reservation to be something which is all the way till eternity. You know, he dreamed of a country where, because of reservation, the economically weaker section or the culturally depressed sector has come to par with the rest of the sections who had enjoyed this privilege for so many centuries. So whatever XYZ reasons, I mean, you can't boil it down to 1, 2, 3. There are so many socio-economic, political reasons that are there. That has not happened yet. But what we see these days is there are more sections who are claiming for reservation because they know that political bank, there's no political will to actually end this.
Exactly.
Right? And ending this will not happen by saying that, okay, you know what, no more reservation.
Yeah.
It will happen when you have taken enough movement that they have risen to a point where you feel that, okay, maybe it is no longer needed for your castes. It is now required for people who are economically weaker, the EWS quota, which is called.
Exactly.
And that makes a lot more sense. Like, I completely agree with that. Like,
I was about to say that point. Like,
so the EWS quota to me makes a lot of sense. But again, exactly. I will not know the historic discrimination that has happened because my community, my ancestors have not faced it.
Right.
So I would not be able to say. But then when I look at the end of affirmative action in US, where all these Ivy League colleges, including Harvard, because of the recent decision of the Supreme Court, affirmative action for African Americans,
yeah,
you know, or blacks has been stopped. Right? And there has been a furor as to whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But here's the thing. They took into account a lot of data. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but they took into account the data and saw, okay, wait, over the last century, over the last few years, the kind of measures they have taken for the upliftment of the section of society has yielded fruit. And now we can take this protection away or take this affirmative action away. So I hope there is a future where we don't need reservation anymore. And I hope there is this political will that will stop needing this to get votes.
Okay. Like, no prejudice towards that OBC, SP.
Yes.
Like, but even I feel that, well, like, now, right now, as you said, that the economically weaker sections, they need support. Right now, they need support because, they don't have resources, proper mm-hmm. resources to, like, you know, go for studies and, like, different to achieve right. their dreams. But right now, in the current scenario, you'll be seeing the lower castes. Like, they are in much higher positions.
Yes.
So they won't be considered as weaker section, like economically weaker section anymore.
Right.
So,
I mean, I completely agree. There are so many cases of people who have topped.
Yeah.
You know, and if you compare their marks with someone who's not even passed the entrance exam, there's a gulf of difference. And that inherently strikes you as very unfair, right? Because doesn't make sense. Why should this be there? Because someone is studying so hard to get the point. And these guys, it's not that they did not have the opportunity.
Yeah.
Their own parents might be in civil services, which means automatically you can assume that they had opportunities. But sometimes we look at it as redressal of past wrongs. You know, and I'm going to draw a very weird analogy here from the top of my head. Recently, India landed on the moon,
yeah.
Chandrayaan mission. And there was a viral video that went around where a British journalist said something about the effect that, okay, now that you have landed on the moon, why don't you return all the billions of money that you have taken as aid?
But I guess Palki Sharma Sheer, I hope I'm not taking the name wrong.
Right. Yeah. No, it's fine.
Yeah. So she replied it with that India has not taken any aid after 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. But see, there has been aid that has come in. There are loans which exist because this is a transaction which goes on across countries. Right. But here's the thing. Think of how much UK has taken from us over the course of years, right?
Exactly.
And now we feel like, yeah, come on, UK should return all that money or, you know, give us something.
Definitely.
That's how exactly the marginalized communities feel. Like, even if they are at a level where they can, you know, get that position, they feel that historically, for whatever cruelties they have suffered, they need compensation.
Like,
yeah. So when you draw this analogy, somehow you empathize with this. You know this should end. Even they know it should end.
Yeah.
But let's see, you know. And I think one of the best examples I can give is Made in Heaven. I don't know if you guys have watched it. There was this Radhika Apte episode which spoke about coming out as a Dalit. And I think that spoke about why reservation was so important. It is the most important thing that the country ever needed, especially when it comes to Harijans. But I hope that there is a expiry date to it.
But the thing is, like, my point is, now that we have reservations and we have set a, like, particular that for these particular people, for this category of people, the passing mark is 35.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, like, most of the students have stopped trying to score higher marks.
Right.
So that is the, like, main problem. I don't have problem with the quota system, but the thing is, like, when I don't get to pass with 80%, but they are getting to pass with 35%. That is my concern.
Right.
And Like, you mentioned about that women quota, and so I would like, you know, drag you into that topic of equality between men and women. So do you think that to empower women, we really need to put down men?
No, of course not. You don't need to put down anyone to ensure the equality of someone. See, the thing is, I get the context of your question, you know, in terms of the rise of feminism, which is the most beautiful thing that exists. There has been this movement which rises on the shoulders of men, that kind of a projection that men are down and that's how you rise.
Yeah.
That sort of a thing. It's unfortunate, but given the whole, you know, there's a Benthamite principle, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Now, if I look at it from that perspective, feminism, the way it's uplifting women, it's the advantages are way too many that this whole collateral damage that takes place, it's really sad. We have to work towards making this better, but it's fine, we can go ahead with it. You know, if men have oppressed women for so many centuries, you know, suddenly we're getting a taste of our own medicine which we have delivered to them, right? It kind of is a horrible, and I'm totally segueing into a different thing. Being a lawyer, I've seen or at least read of cases where laws which were intended to be used as a shield by women are now being used as a sword, you know, when it comes to dowry or domestic violence cases. And in fact, they are being regularly used as a way to settle divorce settlements, you know, even if there is nothing that exists.
Exactly.
Right? And that kind of sullies the entire name of an act which is needed in India, because the domestic violence cases are so much. So what do you do? There is no clear way out of this, you know, and you just can't find a way to figure out that, okay, how do you segregate the false cases, the malicious cases who are using the beautiful tool of feminism to their own personal ends versus women who actually need it, you know? So, yeah.
And like, I really appreciate your supportive statements, like when you accepted, like, we men, we are now tasting the, but I've still seen a lot of men, they claim that women are just taking advantage of the laws. And if, like, women were, like, there was a time when they were depressed, but now they, like, all sort of measures are being taken to empower them, to get them in a position. So why are not, like, why they're not proving it right now? But who will explain them that mental process? It will take some time.
Yeah, of course, it will take time. And even as a society and organization, that has to change. You know, the organizations, even corporate structures, are still coming to terms with the whole idea of maternity leaves, which are so important, period leaves that are so important. You know, women balance, even now, even if people are co-parenting, the societal assumption is that if there's a child, the woman would be slightly more responsible than the man needs to be, even in modern day couples, you know. And it will take time to change this, just not in India, across the world. This is not just an Indo-centric phenomenon. So it will take time. Unfortunately, it is true. Whenever you take a basket of apples, there will be some apples which are rotten, and that kind of gives us impression, because of the foul smell, that the entire basket is rotten. It is not. You know, I mean, the same thing happened with the Me Too movement as well, which set out to be like this global changing movement, and it did. Like, it brought down people like Harvey Weinstein. But the same Me Too movement started to be misutilized or abused by certain sections, you know, for their own private gains. And that people who are afraid of, you know, the Me Too movement started using those 1, 2, 3 stray cases to give the entire movement a bad name, you know. But you can never change this. Whenever you have a law, there will be someone who will use it for the benefit, like for the benefit of the society, and there will be someone who abuses it for their own privilege. So you can't.
So, like, don't you think that it's, like, way better to stop comparing ourselves, that if men are women, men are better or women are better, because it will be a lot better if we both genders, like, join our hands and work together.
I completely agree. I think the whole idea that you should typecast people as men or women, exactly, in terms of a generalized thing is stupid. You know, I mean, if you are on the same level, let's say in the same hierarchy, I would rather say, okay, is Gaurav better or is Gargi better?
Yeah.
Depending on the work performance. My gender or your gender should have no impact on what the performance evaluation would be.
Exactly.
You know, but
like, we both, like, talking about men and women, we both have our own specialities, yeah. own things. Like, if we keep on arguing about this, then there will be a, like, World War 3, 4, 5, and...
Even I agree. Because, see, like, there's this whole old adage which goes, like, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It doesn't matter which one is better or stronger or weaker. They both revolve around the sun.
Exactly. So, and if one has to be better, then why God prepared two of them?
Right.
Like, if... Like women, I would just not support women that women, like most of the women say that we alone can run the world. Of course you can.
Mm.
But the thing is, if you were the only one who is like necessary for this planet, then why God prepared both of us?
Yeah, I mean, see, that's again a very, again, a hyper form of feminism, yeah. which is something which I disagree with. The whole idea that, I mean, women are the most important beings that God has created.
Definitely.
Agreed. Okay. But think about the rail lines which men have put, the construction sites where they are working. These are very male-dominated areas where women don't even statistically apply. You know, be cleaning the gutters, for example. You know, stuff like that. Now, when you look at these kind of jobs, do you really think that men are not important? No. So when you're trying to establish how women are equally or maybe even more capable than the other gender when it comes to certain jobs, you don't have to do it at the cost of someone else.
Exactly.
You know, push yourself to be better and don't pull others down. I think that's something which I would suggest.
Definitely. Like in our class, there was a debate going on about this thing that who is better.
Yeah.
So at that time, a lot of men, like there was a thing I saw that in the row, in the debate, who is better, women or men? In men's side, it was only men, and women's side, it was only women.
Right.
So it was like very heartbreaking to see that neither they supported us, neither like not we supported them.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was expecting some boys to come here this side to women's side and support our points, but how can we expect the same when we are not doing that.
Yeah.
So like the third topic that I'll like to raise is about the secularism.
Okay.
Yeah. So do you think that like these days in India, a lot of propagandas are being raised about the, like, you know, blaming and doubting the Sanatan Dharma.
Hmm.
So what is your point of view?
I do not think at all that the propaganda or the doubts are being raised against the beauty of Sanatan Dharma or Hinduism for that matter, because as a culture itself, it's all embracing. It has always placed the male energy, Shakti, the female energy Shakti on equal terms with Shaivism, the male energy. It's always been that way. So that has never been put into question, according to me. If there are some people, there are always trolls. But recently, there has been an outcry against a very rapid destabilization of our secular ecosystem to favor one at the cost of another. Remember how you spoke about just now that women don't have to say that they are the best by saying that men are down. But recently there has been a trend of saying that Hinduism is the best by putting other religions down. And that has come in very overt ways by official sectors.
But I don't think somehow that is wrong, because the other religions are doing a lot of things. They're even converting people.
Hmm.
Like, obviously, choosing any religion is like it's my choice, whatever I choose. But like forcefully converting someone with greed of money and like those stuff,
so here's
that
the thing.
Is very wrong. So like other religions are doing such stuff. So why not us? What is wrong? We are not putting someone down. But yeah, I'm seeing a lot of reels and like trending reels, the beauty of Sanatan Dharma, Krishna, Shivji, Shakti, everything. So I don't feel anything.
No, as a religion, as a concept, I completely agree that we're the most beautiful thing. But when you're looking at this from a forceful conversion point, so let me give you a live example from Odisha itself, because which has received a massive criticism from the right wing that Christian missionaries do forceful conversion in Odisha.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's take the example. You have gone to the poorest sections of the forest. Okay. There are people who have been starving, who have no access to technology. Government is not able to help them despite wanting to help them. Nothing. Okay. The people, the religion they belong to, those people are not helping them out, have not done anything to advance them. Okay. Now suddenly there are a bunch of missionaries who come. Okay. The whole idea of missionaries across religion, it doesn't have to be only Christianity, because this is a term which we associate with Christianity. But during Ashoka's time, they were Buddhists. You know, during Shankaracharya's time, they were Hindus. In fact, when no other dominant religion existed in India, it used to be Vaishnavites versus Shaivites. Yeah. People trying to spread Shaivites versus people trying to spread Vaishnavites. Missionaries' job always has been to spread religion. Okay, and how does that happen? When they go down and when they're trying to feed, take care of people, show them videos and, you know, take care of them and help them develop. And there are two sides to it. If they are saying that I will only give you food if you convert to Christianity, that is wrong. Or any other religion, that is wrong.
That's what, that's happening right now.
No, but again, that's what, if you look at a biased news report, they would say something like this.
Yeah.
But if you ask the people who have been so converted, if you ask the missionary, they will say, data is not there to conclusively establish this aspect. Now, what happens is there's a sudden outcry which happens when you see that a section of a village which was one religion has now converted into another. And there's an assumption that this has to be forced or under duress. The Supreme Court has come out clearly with guidelines. Then if you're enticing them that you will convert and then I'll give you food, that's wrong. But if you're helping them out and if they want to change into a religion which is respecting them and where they're able to see that their children are not dying, you know, there's nothing wrong in them wanting to change their religion, because that's fine. Right. So when it comes to food, for example, there's a whole propaganda that happened because of Kashmir files. Kerala story. Right. Now, the initial trailer started with around 30,000 women have been converted.
Yeah.
Right. Data showed 3 women. Okay. And then ultimately, what did the director say before the Supreme Court? I'm sorry. He had to apologize. And he said, and so the trailer was revamped to saying 3. You know, of which 2, by the way, were not Hindus. Okay, but this is where any movement, like let's say we were trying to show actually a social issue where certain women might be being brainwashed or certain boys would be being brainwashed to join the ISIS. Because this brainwashing did not happen just in India, it happened across the world.
Exactly.
You know, women from everywhere, UK, US, they all went to join the ISIS when ISIS won on its full bloom. So when you're looking at this, had you highlighted it as it is, but there is a difference between 3 and 3,000 and 30,000. 30,000 means it's an epidemic. 3 means, okay, isolated cases, we need to look at it. You know? And then it assumes the role of a propaganda. I love Sanatan Dharma. I'm very proud of my religion. And in fact, my reels are all about our myths and, you know, the beauty of our mythology and just generally the beautiful things, different aspects of religion are there.
Is exactly not a religion, I would
exactly,
say.
Exactly.
It's a set of rules to live a peaceful, happy and successful life.
Yeah, it's a way of living that has come about. The reason why it is defined as a religion is because of existence of other religions.
Right.
Now, when the existence of other religions was not known to us in Puranic times or in medieval times, in the Guptas and whatnot.
Sanatan Dharma the most, the oldest religion that exists?
See, it is very difficult to, you know, when we look at history, we're looking at the entire millennia as one unit.
Yeah.
And that is wrong. History cannot be looked at from that perspective. Because if you look at the evolution of gods in the Vedic pantheon, earlier we had a similar system to that of the Greeks, or rather the Greeks had a similar system to us. We had a pantheon of gods which were elemental, like Indra was for thunder, lightning, rain. Agni was for fire. Then you had, for everything, for machines, we had Vishwakarma. You know, every element that we saw around us, we gave ascribed a god to it. Right? And there was, again, we worshipped them. Does anyone worship Indra anymore? No. You know, does anyone worship Vayu anymore? Though we worship Hanuman, right? He's always called the son of the wind, right? But does anyone worship Vayu?
No one.
Because slowly that devolved and we established 3 primordial entities above them, the Tridev, basically the creator, the destroyer and the preserver. And then in the middle, if you look at history, there used to be a lot of violence between Shaivites and Vaishnavites. The same way you might say, let's say Hindu versus Muslim riots that take place.
Do you think that it was all pre-planned?
Pre-planned?
Pre-planned in the sense that people came and aggravated, provoked people that there are differences among you and...
See, that will... So pre-planned in the sense there will all any violence that takes place which is orchestrated in such a manner will always be pre-planned, but not by external agencies or something on those lines. You know, as we have spoken about this even before, that the whole concept of narcissism or minor differences, when there are two sects who are living together who are similar in every way and there is one thing that differentiates them, suddenly they will all get very aggressive about it. I mean, that if you look at the history of Jews and their persecution across Europe, you will see that they were the same, but just because they looked slightly different, they had to keep certain kind of beard and certain kind of clothes,
black eyes,
sabbath and all of that, you know, keep a hair thing, and they suddenly became different from the others and they began to be persecuted. And there's a lot of historical factors involved, can't go too deep into that, but that's exactly what happened. So I've always felt whenever, from the dawn of time, in fact, let me go even further, when there was no religion in the world, Homo sapiens came in. Yeah. That's our species. But Homo sapiens was not the first human race. There was Homo erectus, Homo Neanderthals. And science has taught us that whenever a new species used to evolve, it used to be followed by the destruction of the older species. So when Homo sapiens came in, they started evolving into Homo sapiens, Neanderthals and sapiens had a lot of conflicts. And ultimately the Neanderthals were wiped out. They were a completely different human race. Like how there's a cat family, how tiger and lion are different. Similarly, even the human race, Homo sapiens were different from Homo Neanderthals. Homo Neanderthals were different from Homo erectus.
Isn't it weird, like how we humans always pick upon like those who are different from us, like yeah, we bully them and
yeah, it's a very weird trait of humanity in that, and this is common across cultures and civilizations, of not existing in peace. But then again, when I think about animal kingdom, I mean, we don't get to see it, yeah, but if you look at the territory duels that take place and the kind of chaotic world that they live in, it happens in them as well. So maybe the whole idea of, you know, Bible says something very interesting about this, that God created man in his own image, but maybe the devil kind of interfered there.
Right. Yeah. Like, not to go off track, but like lot of things, like I said about the bullying thing, like the black people were bullied for a reason. Then, but this skin thing, I find it very foolish and like very crazy, because how come that's a skin color, this is a skin color, like why to even bully someone because of this? Like the with the same thought, God created both of us,
right?
So why to, because I've seen, because of this thing has impacted me a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was a very insecure kid.
Right.
And after I like got into the world of K-pop, and like, again, I would not, please, editor, don't term this as a dark side of K-pop, K-drama. No, I'm not telling about the dark side. It is my mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I won't blame anyone, but after watching their MVs and their body structure, even after knowing that I am an Indian, I am much younger than them, I became very, you know, conscious about my looks, my skin, my body, and I exhausted myself to like until I started running to the hospital for like every day. So this thing, I would say, like, we humans really need to stop this, like comparing ourselves with others.
Correct. We should. In a utopian world, we would do that.
Yeah.
But did you know, in history, interestingly, Indians, ancient Indians, there was reverse racism. Like if people were fair, they were looked down upon. So what happened, there is a whole concept called Malech or Mlecha. In Odia, there's a word called Mlecha. My mother calls me that whenever I've not taken a shower quickly by like 10 a.m. in the morning, like Mlecha. Okay. Malech is a dirty word. Okay. It was used vis-a-vis foreigners, okay, who were way too fair, like the Greeks who were called the Yavanas, the Turks, because they also existed in the times of the Mahabharata. Okay. And we call them Malech for different reasons. They did not follow our Vedic system. And second and most importantly, they did not bathe regularly. Okay. Because see, we live in a hot climate.
Yeah.
Right. But if you look at the UK king, the queens of the kings of England, they used to take a shower probably once in a month or once in 2 months. They used to take a cloth and maybe wipe their hands. Because it was such a cold weather,
right.
Taking a shower was not an important thing. Whereas in our civilization, every morning you're supposed to take a bath because it purifies you, right? So bath and hygiene was a very important thing of our culture. And this was part of the dark-skinned people, this culture. So whenever we used to look at fair people, way too fair. Like the Greeks who are coming in or whatever. Yeah. We're like, yeah, they're dirty. That's why Draupadi's skin color and Krishna's skin color were considered the epitome of beauty, and they both were dark. You know, Draupadi was fire-kissed, which means that, you know, she had a very charred complexion, tan complexion. And Krishna, though he's depicted in a lot of places as blue in color, his actual description was completely black. He was very dark.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And that was considered the highest standard of beauty. So it's interesting how we have changed because of history. Because over the years, we have been ruled by dynasties from the north. And whether the intermingling of Middle Eastern population with Indian population and this whole fair skin complexion came about.
Yeah.
And then the Britishers came in for 200 years. It went into our psyche thinking that our overlords, the one who we're supposed to bow before, are people who are fair skinned. So that became like, okay, the highest standard.
We don't even think that like we belong to a different region. Because the geographical region, the climate has a huge impact on us.
Yeah.
Our body type, our skin color, our hair, eyes, everything. So like we need to focus on
that. We are changing in that direction. There have been Fair and Lovely had to change its company name. And I think that's a great success story. Even though it still continues to sell the most amount of products in India. But at least we're changing in that direction where if you are talking about this whole fair thing, people are scared and embarrassed of saying that, okay, they want a fair skinned girl. You know, earlier it used to be very openly said. Now it's like, okay, I know this is wrong. I will still say it. But, you know, I will whisper it, you know, in this whole matrimonial circles.
Women are like normally very much objectified on that basis. Slim body, fair skin.
Yeah. I mean, not even men, by the way. Like, oh, not good dark skin. No. You know, that whole idea, that thing is slowly going away. You know, we're trying to get the whole tall, dark, handsome thing back, I suppose. Yes.
So I would really like love to end our conversation on this message that let's have peace out.
Yeah, I mean, totally. Be proud in your own skin and be comfortable in your own skin. I think that's what's most important. Thank you so much, Gargi, for those amazing questions.
Cheers.